"Follow at your best pace," Zuga shouted to his heavily burdened porters, dropping his unwanted equipment into the mud for them to pick up. "You can fill your bellies with meat and fat tonight, if you put your feet to it now." They had to gamble all Zuga's remaining strength on the opening play, using speed to beat the rain and to reach the bulls before they made a turn into the wind and took the scent. They ran at the spoor, going hard from the first, knowing that even a healthy man could not hold that pace beyond an hour or two, at the most, before his heart broke. In the first mile, Zuga's vision was starring and fragmenting again. Sweat drenched his lean body, and he reeled like a drunkard as his legs threatened to give under him. "Run through it," Jan Sharut counseled him grimly. He did it, by sheer effort of will. He drove himself through to that pace beyond the pain. Quite suddenly, his vision cleared, and though there was no feeling at all in his legs, they drove on steadily under him, so he seemed to float over the ground without effort. Running at his side, Jan Sharut recognized the moment when Zuga broke the shackles and went clear of his own weakness. He said nothing but glanced sideways at him, eyes bright with admiration, and he nodded once. Zuga did not see that nod, for his head was up and his dreaming gaze was fixed far ahead. They ran the sun to its zenith, Jan Sharut not daring to break the rhythm, for he knew that Zuga would drop like a man shot through the heart if they stopped to rest. They ran on as the sun began to drop, pursued by the ponderous cohorts of the oncoming storm that threatened it with extinction, and their own shadows danced ahead of them along the deeply driven elephant spoor. In a tight bunch behind Zuga, his four gun-bearers matched him pace for pace, ready to hand him a weapon at the instant he required it. The hunter's instinct warned Jan Sharut. He twisted his head every few minutes to look back along the trail they had already run. That was how he picked them up. They were two grey shadows merging softly into the darker acacia shadows below the dripping trees. But they were moving with steadfast purpose, circling to strike their own spoor again, throwing a loop about their pursuers and taking the wind from them. The bulls were half a mile away, moving with that swinging, deceptively leisurely gait that would bring them within minutes full onto the hot trail with which the small band of hunters had overlaid their own huge pug marks. The trail would be reeking with the rank odour of man, the air thick with it. Jan Sharut touched Zuga's arm, turning him back upon their own run without checking him nor breaking the driving rhythm of his numbed legs. "We have to catch them before they cut our spoor," he called softly. He saw Zuga's eyes come back into focus and the colour flare in his waxen pale cheeks as Zuga turned and saw for the first time the two huge shapes cruising serenely through the open forest under the tall umbrella-shaped acacias, moving with a stately deliberation down towards the string of reeking man-prints in the red mud. The big bull was leading, his gaunt frame too tall and bony for the wasted flesh, over which the skin hung in deep folds and bags. The huge yellow tusks were too long and heavy for the ancient head, and his ears were ripped and torn into scarred tatters that tangled onto his creased cheeks. He had been wallowing in a mud hole, and his body was slick and shining with wet red mud. He stepped out on his long, heavily boned legs, around which the thick, loose skin bagged and drooped like a badly tailored pair of breeches, and close behind him strode his askari, a big, heavily toothed elephant, but dwarfed by his leader. Zuga and Jan Sharut ran together, stride for stride, their breath hissing and gasping in their throats, as they spent their last reserves to get in gunshot range before the bulls took the scent. They traded all stealth, any attempt at concealment for speed, trusting that the weak eyesight of the old bulls would betray them. This time the vagaries of the weather favoured them, for as they ran, the storm burst about them again. It had held off just long enough to allow them to come up, and now the thick streamers of pale grey rain were drawn across the forest like lace curtains, and the bad light beneath the thick cloud banks gave them cover to cross the last few hundred yards unseen, and the tapping rain and the rush of the wind in the branches of the acacias muffled their racing footfalls. 150 yards ahead of Zuga, the old bull hit the manspoor, and it stopped him, as though he had run into the side of an invisible cliff of glass. He flared back on his hindquarters, his back humping and his wrinkled, ivoried head flying up high, the ragged banners of his ears filling like the mainsail of a tall ship and clapping thunderously as he flapped them against his shoulders. He froze like that for a long moment, groping at the tainted earth with the tip of his trunk. Then he lifted it to his mouth and sprayed the scent into the open pink buds of his olfactory organs. The dread and hated odor struck him like a physical force, and he went back another pace. Then his trunk lifted straight into the air above him, and he wheeled, and like a well-trained pair of coach horses, his tall Ascari wheeled with him, shoulder to shoulder and flank to flank. They began to run, and Zuga was still 100 yards behind them. Jan Shirut dropped onto one knee into the mud and flung up his musket. At the same instant, the Ascari checked slightly and swung left, crossing his leader's rear. Perhaps it was unintentional, but neither Zuga nor Jan Shirut believed that. They knew that the younger bull was drawing fire, protecting the other with his own body. "You want it? Take it then, you thunder!" Jan Shirut shouted angrily. He knew he had lost too much ground by pausing to fire. Aiming for the younger bull, Jan Shirut took the hip shot, and the bull staggered to it, flecks of red mud flying from his skin where the ball struck, and he broke his stride, favouring the damaged joint, swinging out of the line of his run, broadside to the hunters, while the great bull ran on alone. Zuga could have killed the crippled bull with a heart shot, for the animal was down to a dragging, humpback trot, and the range was less than 30 paces. But Zuga ran straight past him, never checking, hardly glancing at him, knowing he could leave Jan Shirut to finish that business. He ran after the big bull, but despite his utmost endeavour, losing ground to him steadily. Ahead of them, the ground dipped into a shallow, open saucer, and beyond that it rose to another ridge, on which the wild teak trees stood like sentinels in the grey rain. The bull went down into the saucer, still in his initial burst of speed, stretching out so that his padfall sounded like the steady beat of a bass drum, opening the gap between himself and his hunter until he reached the bottom of the dip, and there he was almost halted. His weight broke the surface of the swampy ground, and he sank through almost to his shoulders and had to lunge for each step, with the glutinous mud sucking and squelching obscenely at each of his frantic movements. Swiftly, Zuga closed the range, and his spirits took wing, his exultation driving back his weakness and fatigue. He felt intoxicated with battle lust. He reached the swampy ground and leapt from tussock to tussock of coarse swamp grass while the other bull struggled on ahead of him. Closer and closer still, Zuga came up to him, almost point-blank range, less than 20 yards, and at last he stopped and balanced on one of the little islands of grass roots. Just ahead of him, the bull had reached the far side of the swamp and was heaving himself out onto the firm ground at the foot of the slope. The bull's front legs were higher than his still bogged hindquarters. The whole slope of his back was exposed to Zuga. The knuckles of his massive spine stood out clearly through the mud-painted skin, and the arched staves of his ribcage were like the frames of a Viking longboat. Zuga fancied he could actually see the pounding rhythm of the great heart beating against them. There could be no mistake this time. In the months since their first encounter, Zuga had become a skilled huntsman. He knew the soft and vital places in the mountainous bulk of an elephant's body. At this range and from this angle, the heavy ball would shatter the spine between the shoulder blades without losing any of its velocity, and it would go on deep to the heart, to those thick serpentine arteries that fed the lungs. He touched the hair trigger, and with a pop like a child's toy, the gun misfired. The great grey beast heaved himself clear of the mud and went away up the slope, now at last settling into the swinging, ground-eating gait, which would carry him 50 miles before nightfall. Behind him, Zuga reached the firm ground and flung down the useless weapon, dancing with impatience as he screamed at his bearers to bring up the second gun. Matthew was 50 paces behind him, slipping and staggering in the swampy ground. Mark, Luke and John were strung out behind him. "Come on, come on!" screamed Zuga, and snatched the second gun from Matthew and dashed away up the slope. He had to catch the bull before he reached the crest of the slope, for down the other side he would go like an eagle on the wind. Zuga ran now with all his heart, with all his will, and the very last dregs of his strength, while behind him Matthew stopped, snatched up the misfired weapon from where Zuga had thrown it down, and acting instinctively in the heat and excitement of the chase, he reloaded it. He poured another handful of black powder on top of the charge and ball already in the barrel, and tamped down a second quarter-pound ball of lead on top of it all. In so doing, he changed the gun from a formidable weapon to a lethal bomb that could maim or even kill the man who attempted to fire it. Then Matthew slipped another percussion cap over the nipple and ran on up the slope after Zuga. The bull was nearing the crest of the ridge, and Zuga was coming up on him, but slowly, the difference in their speed just barely discernible. At last Zuga's strength was failing. He could keep this pace for many minutes more, and he knew when he finally stopped, he would be on the verge of total physical collapse. His vision was swimming and wavering, and his feet stumbled and slipped on the wet, lichen-covered rocks of the slope, and the rain beat into his face, almost blinding him. 60 yards ahead of him, the bull reached the crest, and there he did something that Zuga had never seen a hunted elephant do before. He turned broadside, flaring his ears to look at his pursuers. Perhaps he had been pushed too hard. Perhaps he had been hunted too often, and the hatred had accumulated like a weed below the waterline of an old ship. Perhaps this was his last defiance. For a moment he stood tall and glistening black with mud and rain, silhouetted against the low grey sky, and Zuga hit him in the shoulder, the gun ringing like a bronze cathedral bell, and the long lick of red flame blooming briefly in the gloom. Both man and beast reeled to the shot. Zuga driven off balance by the recoil, and the bull taking the hardened lead ball through the ribs and going back on his haunches, the rheumy old eyes clenching tightly to the shock of it. The bull kept his feet, though he was hard hit, and he opened his eyes and saw the man, that hated, evil-smelling and persistent animal that had persecuted him so relentlessly down the years. He launched himself back down the slope like an avalanche of dark grey granite, and his repeated blood squeals rang against the low sky, and Zuga turned and ran from the charging bull, while the earth trembled beneath his feet at the weight and nearness of the stricken beast. Matthew stood his ground, even in the terrible press of the moment. Zuga loved him for that. He stood to do his duty, to deliver the second gun to his master. Zuga reached him, just ahead of the charging bull, dropped his smoking weapon, snatched the second gun from Matthew, never suspecting that it had been double-shotted, and as he turned, he thumbed the hammer back and swung up the long, thick barrel. The bull was on top of him, blotting out the rain-sodden sky, the long, yellow ivories raised like roof beams over his head, and the trunk already uncoiling to reach down and snatch Zuga up. Zuga pressed the hair trigger. And this time the gun fired. With a shattering roar, the barrel burst, the metal opening like the petals of a flower, and the burning powder flew back into Zuga's face, singeing his beard and blistering the skin of his face. The hammer was blown clean off the barrel, and it hit Zuga in the cheek, just under the right eye, cutting a jagged wound clean down to the bone. The shattered weapon flew out of his grasp and slammed back into his shoulder with such force that he felt the ligaments and tendons tearing. Zuga was hurled into a backward somersault that carried him just beyond the grasp of the bull's questing trunk.